National Rock Review.
Hey, boys and girls, thank you so much for choosing to listen to another one of the features brought to you by National Rock Review, bringing you the biggest stars, the stars that are going to be big, and the stars that paved the way for the stars you're listening to now to even be here making the music they are. I have a very special person on the line all the way from the other side of the pond with me right now, and before it gets too late and he starts getting cranky with me, let me just throw it to him and let him introduce himself. So, mysterious London rocker, who do I have on the phone today?
Hello there. This is Brian Tatler, the guitarist with Diamond Head.
Excellent. Now, for those who might have no clue, been in diapers, or haven't really been a fan of the 80s thrash scene, Diamond Head was one of the first bands in what we now know is the new wave of British heavy metal. But you guys have some very up-to-date, very exciting news because you have a new album coming out this summer. What can you tell me about it?
Yes, we started this album at the beginning of last year and spent about 6 months working on the writing and arrangement, and then recorded it in a studio in the Midlands by us. There's 11 tracks on it. It's all brand new material, and we've got this fantastic new singer who joined in 2014, who's made, you know, a real impression on me and the band, and he's got such an amazing range and power to his voice. So this is his first album. He's never done an album himself before. He's produced an album, but he's never sang a whole album before, and he's written all the lyrics, whereas I you know, do the music. It's called Diamond Head, and it's coming out on Dissonance Records, and it'll be available June 3rd.
Okay, now is it going to release differently in Europe, or is it the same release date worldwide?
I think Europe have got it a couple of weeks early. It's been set up to come out on April 22nd in Europe. So, yeah, we're just a week behind, I think.
Okay, all right. Now, from everything that I've read and been able to dig up, you were kind of in a malaise of not really feeling the music anymore until you met the young singer that you have with you now. How much of an impact did he really have when you met him, just as far as relighting the fire in you, if you will?
I think it took a little time, because initially there was no talk of doing anything new. It was just our last singer emigrated to Brisbane, and it became very complicated and expensive to keep flying in backwards and forwards for gigs. So we talked about getting a singer who lived in the UK, and we found Rasmus through a friend. And at first it was just a case of gigs. We booked like a tour. We got 14, 15 dates. Ras did the tour, and he was great on the tour, and he'd learnt the material so well, and he's got like a trained voice. He knew how to look after it, and he could hold notes and his range. But we just thought he was so good, we offered him the job, and it wasn't until then that we'd get talking about maybe writing new material, and I said we should at least try, because you never know, it could be really good. And once we started, my interest probably picked up. I probably didn't have a lot of confidence in the material I had, because I'd been writing since 2007 at home. And anyway, I gave the material to Raz. I gave him 45 pieces of music on 2 CDs, and he listened to them and picked out all the stuff he liked. And really, all the stuff he thought sounded the most like Diamond Head, and I just thought, I'm okay with that. I think that's probably a good way to go.
Okay. Now, did he, I guess if you've been writing music since what, 76, probably 75, maybe even earlier.
76, really, when the band formed.
Has your style of writing evolved, or do you pretty much still do songs the same way you were doing then? I mean, now I know
it's
that.
A good point. Yeah.
Well,
I think I've probably learned a lot over the years, the techniques, relative minors and all sorts, and more and more chords. But I think they still start with a riff, and it builds from the riff. And I think once you've got a riff, the whole track has to have a mood, that, so it's not sticking out. There's not bits that don't work. I like the whole thing to flow and have dynamics and give off a feeling that they all belong together, and that the verse rolls into the chorus, and there's a balance to a track that I've probably just picked up on and learned over the years from listening and studying. I've 40 years of craft, really.
Well, I do have to say that 40-year trek, you have inspired quite a few bands from the time that the music left London and reached the shores over here in the States.
Yeah.
You've played with Iron Maiden. You've played with Metallica on a few occasions. You went on tour with Megadeth in 2005. How much fun was it to play with some of these bands that looked up to you guys for so much of their own sound and inspiration?
It's always good. To play with Metallica is always fantastic because they're just so big, and it doesn't happen very often. When we play our own shows, you don't get to play to those sort of crowds. So now and again, you get thrown a bone and you support Metallica in front of like 50,000 people, and it's incredible. I don't get that nervous about playing big gigs. I love it. I think it's exciting, and it feels like a reward for all the hard work you put in fans and playing clubs. But the tour with Megadeth was particularly great, I thought, because it was very well done. Every night was sold out. It was 22 nights all across Europe. And Dave Mustaine, being a fan of Diamond Head, couldn't have been more helpful. I know he's got this fearsome reputation, but whenever I've been with him, he's been really great and very kind. He came into our dressing room after the first gig and said, if there's anything you need, if your amp breaks down, we'll get it fixed. If you need anything, come and see one of the crew and we'll sort it out. So they just wanted it to work. He was really glad to have us on board. He used to say, play this song and play that song. If it wasn't in the set, like play Lightning to the Nations. So it was great. A bit unique, really, to have that kind of relationship with the main band.
Right. With the album, I have to ask, because it's such a new place with the new vocalist, for whatever reason, a lot of a band sound is the vocalist, and for obvious reasons.
Yes, I agree.
With him being on this album, you said that you started out with quite a few pieces and it kind of got whittled down, and then finally 11 tracks made the album itself.
Yeah. That's right.
Which one of
those? Well, it started with 45, as I said, and then it went down to 14, and we picked 11 for the album. So there's plenty of stuff that we didn't use that we might start working on at some point. I've always got riffs. I've got cassettes of riffs. That's how old school I am. I still, just to jot down ideas, I'll use a cassette, you know, quick to get an idea down. And I've collected riffs all my life.
Well, I was curious because an album for an artist is pretty much like their new child at the time that they get done with it. With all the time and effort they've put into it. Out of those 11 tracks that are on the album, which one would be your personal favorite if you had to pick one?
I like the first track, Bones. I think that's one of my favorites, and that's probably why it's track one, because I just think it's quite instant and it's powerful and has an effect on the listener. My second favourite, if I can pick a second favourite, would be All the Reasons You Live, track 5. I really like that as well. I think Rasmus's vocal melody on the verses for that are fantastic.
Now, have you guys released a single for Play yet off of the album, or is that still the...
No, we haven't. We've just said, you know, as a lead track, we'd go with Bones, which is track one. And we did a little video. Rasmus brought, like, some GoPros and stuff on when we did some shows last year. And we did that 70,000 Tons of Metal show just recently on the cruise ship, and we filmed the gigs, and Rasmus put together a video for Bones, and we've been using that as a promo. So that's our kind of single, lead track.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, since you brought it up, what was it like playing on a ship out in the sea for, what, it's like 3 or 4 days?
Yeah, it was kind of 4 days. You leave on the Thursday and you come back on the Monday, and it was fantastic. I've never been on a cruise before, and I've certainly not done anything like that before, where there were 60 bands on board with 3,000 people. This was 14 stories high, this boat was, called the Royal Caribbean, and you leave from Florida, you go round Jamaica and the Caribbean Sea, and then arrive back in Florida, and it's just fantastic, very luxurious, and very, very well run, and everybody seemed to be having a great time. It was great, a real experience.
Well, I have to ask, talking about experiences, unfortunately, we've had some pretty big names in the music industry leave us, and some earlier than others. Is there any memory that comes to mind of Lemmy, for obvious reasons, because you guys opened for them many, many years ago, and I'm just curious to get your aspect on that one way or the other.
We never really did that, like a tour or anything with Motorhead. All we ever seemed to do is we'd occasionally be on the same festival. So, to be honest, I haven't... I never got to know Lemmy. I met him once, really, at a club in London. It would have been lovely to have toured with Motorhead. I think, you know, you could have had something with the two heads, Motorhead, Diamond Head. But it wasn't meant to be. And I just, you know, I've got a lot of respect for the guy. He always stayed true to himself. He was an original. And didn't follow trends or fashions, just kept doing what they do best. And so, you know, a sad loss to the rock and metal world.
And let this be a lesson to all the kids out there listening now that Wikipedia is not always correct. So that is a good lesson to double check on.
Yes, we'll leave it at that.
Now, some people, and I don't necessarily believe this myself, but some people might be of the opinion, like Diamond Head, 1976, you know, their best stuff is behind them. What would you say to somebody that had that opinion? Because I actually have heard the album, and I rather do like it. is it just bugger off? If you don't like it, then you don't have to listen to it? Or is it one of those things that you're fine with all that because the music proves that they're completely off their rocker and have no idea what they're talking about?
Well, you can't please everybody. You do what you like, I think. We definitely tried to make a Diamond Head record this time. There's absolutely no point in trying to be like some of the modern metal bands. I wouldn't know where to start. You know, some of these bands do it so well, and we would just be out of our depth if we were doing that, you know, super detuned and growling vocals and stuff, you know. Leave it to the masters. But I think Diamond Head has to do what Diamond Head, you know, is kind of famous for. It's about riffs, it's about more melodic vocals, and some energy, some fast songs. I think, you know, I wouldn't argue with somebody who didn't like it. I think it's all about taste. You know, I probably listened to some stuff that would surprise a few people. And I think we've all got, you know, our tastes, our individual taste, and our pet kind of, what's the word? Your guilty pleasures.
Okay, now, because I'm an interviewer and this is my job, I have to ask, what would be the last song that you listened to that you would consider a guilty pleasure that would just blow a diehard Diamond Head fan away because you're listening to it?
So what would be my guilty pleasure?
Yes.
I suppose ABBA.
Okay. My father-in-law, may his soul rest in the Irish pub in the sky, was also affectionate towards the band, and it was completely out of character for him. So maybe the band just has a special spell over men.
Yeah, well, they also sold 350 million records, so there must be something of quality about that band that survived, you know, 40 years.
Right, touche. Now, I have to ask, because you have been around for so long, and this is my own personal question, just for my own shits and giggles, if you will. Spinal Tap is one of the movies that is very formative for me just because of how much fun the guys portrayed rock and roll to be and how insane it can be sometimes. Do you have that seminal moment where you guys can sit down on the bus going from one place to another, and the only thing somebody has to do is say a key word, and everybody knows the story, everybody laughs, or everybody just kind of shakes their head in disbelief? Do you have that Spinal Tap moment?
There's a few that pop into my head, crazy things. I do remember we played in a Bullring. We were supporting Black Sabbath in 1983, and we played in this Bullring, and the amps weren't getting, like, we were running off generators, so my amp wasn't getting 240 volts, and it sounded terribly thin and weedy, and I ran over and turned everything up to 4. You know, if it had gone to 11, believe me, and I put the distortion on, and it was still weedy. And I don't know what was wrong with our sound, but the punters, the Spanish people, started filling up little bags or crisp packets of stuff with the shale off the Bullring, the floor of the Bullring, and throwing them at us. And one of them hit our bass player in the face and sort of stuck to his sweat, so he looked completely orange. And he just shouted down the microphone, "Fuck off, you Spanish bastards!" And it went echoing all around the Bullring. And when he came off, he got like a yellow top on, and he looked like an unlit match, we thought. So that was fun.
That is great.
Yeah. There's some mad stories. somebody came backstage and they tattooed "Am I Evil" on the back of their legs.
Well, I have to ask, are you planning on doing another book anytime soon? With
No, is the short answer. I do get asked for this book, though, because I only made 500 copies, and we sold all those, and ever since then it's become quite a collector's item, and it's like £100 or something on eBay. So I get asked if we'll do a reprint, so I might write another chapter, you know, bring it up to date and put it out again. I've been thinking about that. It's just something I've got to actually get on and do it. But last year I just focused on the album, and that felt more important to me than anything else. So at some point, hopefully, we'll get the book out again.
Okay. Now, since you guys have always been lovers of vinyl, both to good results and an unfortunate pressing that caused an LP of yours to skip, are there any plans to release this album on vinyl?
Yes, it's definitely coming on vinyl. We already printed up some copies because we weren't doing it ourselves originally. We did a completely self-funded album. We paid for everything, the rehearsals and recording, mixing, manufacturing, mastering. And then we've done this deal with Dissonance Productions. We did this in February. And they've took over since. And so they're doing CD, vinyl, digital outlets, etc. So there's definitely a final version of the new Diamond Head album coming. It'll be a gatefold sleeve, and I think it's going to be a purple vinyl, so it'll be really nice to see. I haven't got a copy yet, but it's on its way.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, just for all the record collectors out there, do you have any of the original pressings of your first albums, or is that a dream cache that they'll never get to see?
Yeah, I've got two copies. That's all I've got. And they're sort of stashed away. I've tried to keep everything. I'm like the archivist in this band. And I'll try and keep copies of everything. I've got all the singles. And I've even kept old tapes, you know, from rehearsal and gigs and things like that. But, two copies. That's all. Of Lightning to the Nation. That's all I've got.
Oh, okay, because that one that was basically being used as a demo that had the clear sleeve is a very pricey find, if you can.
It is. You don't see them. Occasionally people bring them to gigs and, you know, we sign them, but it's very rare. And I always say, well, this is valuable, you know, look after it. It's a family heirloom.
Now, when are you coming across the pond to the States, or have those dates been set yet?
We haven't set them yet. We're working on it now because we've got a lot of dates across Europe. We've got about 20 plus at the moment. And it looks like it'll be November, maybe December, something like that. But we are planning to get over there. We've toured America 3 times in the past 5 years. And you know, we've done some great stuff. Some of the places we've got to have been great. So we're definitely coming over again. It's just it'll be Rasmus's first US tour as well. So it'll be nice for him, and it's something he's been looking forward to for years. You know, getting to tour America. It's quite an achievement, isn't it? A bucket list.
Okay, cool. So I heard that pre-orders for the album have started or getting ready to start?
Yeah, I think they're already. I think you can already order it through Dissonance or Plastic Head.
Okay, and those both have .coms then, I take it?
Yeah. It'll be Dissonance Productions, and as I say, that it's distributed by Plastic Head, which is a massive distribution company. So, yeah, you should be able to pre-order it now.
Okay, and will there be digital copies for like iTunes and Amazon and all that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think you can pre-order it through Amazon as well. But yeah, it's all going off now.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for giving us a call. And when you come to the States, if you're anywhere close to Detroit, I'll have to buy you a good pint or a good cup of tea if we can find one, depending on your taste at that point in time.
Okay, that'd be nice. I'd enjoy that. That'd be great. I think we've been to Detroit before, a couple of years ago. I can't remember where, but we played a club in Detroit. But I forgot where. Is it Blondie's?
Where was that?
Was that Blondie's? Was that Detroit?
It doesn't sound familiar, but then again, who knows?
Okay, I can't remember what we played Detroit. Anyway, so Eric, thank you for the interview. Been great with National Rock Review.
Thank you very much, Brian. Go get you some rest, and we'll definitely keep our eye on you as the tour goes on.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.